Hello and welcome. We're now going to discuss our case on criminal law, and it's a very interesting, rather gory case. One of those things like when you see a dead dog on the side of the road, you don't want to look, but you have to. It's not good. It's the first case that you learn in law school, in the criminal law, because it kind of illustrates how the criminal law thinks. It is the case of Regina v. Dudley and Stevens. And I will take you back to 1884. It is a long time ago. Queen Victoria was on the throne of England. That's why the prosecuting entity is Regina, which is the British name for the Queen. Dudley and Stevens were the two defendants on there. There was also a third one by the name of Edmund Brooks, and we'll get to that in a minute. But Regina versus Dudley and Stevens all emanated out of a voyage on the ocean, bringing a yacht from England to Australia. Let me tell you the story, because it's an interesting story and it has a rather sad end. Hence the criminal trial. And remember, why Regina? Because under British common law, the King and Parliament are sovereign. In the United States, that case would read People versus Dudley and Stevens, because the people of the United States are the sovereignty in our country. Well, 1884, there is a very wealthy Australian lawyer who's made a lot of money and has been very successful in his law practice. And as many successful Australians, 95% of Australians live within 5 miles of the water, and so did Mr. Watt. John Henry Watt, who was this lawyer, said, you know, I finally made my money. My proverbial ship has come in. I want to buy a great big yacht. But it's not any yacht. I want to have England, the greatest shipbuilders of all time, make that yacht. And I want to buy a great yacht. So John Henry goes to England and he orders the manufacture and construction of this yacht that he wants to purchase. And he names it the Mignonette. And this yacht, which he has ordered, the purpose of this, is rather small time. It's not very big, but it is, particularly for a sea voyage over there, he designs it and he has it built. Well, before the day and age of airplanes or any other means of transportation, that means that this relatively small yacht, which was, if memory serves me correctly, it was about 50 feet, which is sounds like a big ship, which would be rather large for a pleasure craft. But the problem is to sail it across the world from England to Australia, across three oceans, because you're going to sail through the Atlantic, then the Indian Ocean, and then to the Pacific. That's not a very big boat. And as a result, he had trouble hiring a crew to be able to do it, because a lot of people said, I'm not going to sail that little bitty thing all the way to Australia from England. It was the only way to get it there. So he has the yacht built, and he christens it the Mignonette. And he hires a captain who's rather down on his luck to be able to hire a crew and sail it from England to Australia. And he hires this man by the name of Thomas Dudley, who's known somewhat as a troubled man. He has some rumored that maybe he was an alcoholic, but he was fired from a number of captain jobs. But he was willing to take this on. He wanted to rehabilitate himself. He wanted to be a captain of other ships. So he said, okay, I'll take on this dangerous job of sailing this small yacht, 1,600 miles, about 10,000 miles from England all the way to Australia. And it's a long, long way to do that. So what's it? He's going to sail halfway across the globe in this very small boat. Well, he's got to get a crew of this because the yacht had sails. It needed to have people man the sails and be the crew. And he hired two of his friends as what they called able-bodied seamen to be able to take on this mission and sail the boat all the way to Australia. Also at the time, one of his acquaintances, the Parker family, comes up to him and says, we have this son, Richard. Would you please take him on this voyage? He wants to become a sailor. Would you please take him on, this young Richard, as your cabin boy? And he says, Jesus, this is a dangerous mission that I'm going on all the way halfway across the world. You sure you want to do that? No, he wants to become a sailor. We trust you. You're a moral, nice young, you're a moral captain. We know you won't abuse the guy or anything. Please take him on the trip. Okay. So he takes him up. So they start off on July 5th where the weather is beautiful and sail out of England towards Australia. And 1,700 miles into the journey, they're off the Cape of Good Hope, which is around the coast of Africa, heading towards Australia. Okay, they're still 8,000 miles away from Australia, but they're heading towards Australia, and they meet a horrible storm. And on the date of this storm that occurs, July 5th of the storm, they set sail on May 19th, 1884. The storm occurs on July 5th, and the storm is horrific. Waves are pounding over the ship. The mast of the ship breaks, and they're in deep trouble. And all of a sudden, a rogue wave comes over the top and floods the ship, and it starts to sink. The captain immediately says, get to the one lifeboat that's on board. And they get on board the lifeboat, and they're in the middle of the storm in the lifeboat. It's absolutely horrible. And the ship, the Mignonette, sinks to the bottom of the ocean. They're in the lifeboat. Well, in the lifeboat, because so many things happened in the storm that was so quick, there was no time to get the food in the lifeboat. And as a result, there was only one tin containing a handful of turnips, which aren't delicious at any time, but that's all they had to eat. And they were in this boat for days on end. This July 5th, the boat goes down. And on July 8th, just 3 days later, they finished all the turnips, even though they cut them in small little pieces and distributed them. As a result, the turnips are gone. The next day, they spotted a small sea turtle. They killed it. They ate it, and including the bones, by the way. They ate the bones. They ate the turtle. 10 days later, everything was gone. So you're on July 17th. And it's 12 days from the day the boat goes down, and they're starving. The sun is beating down on them. It's horrible. And they know that they're going to die if they don't you know, catch some fish or do something. They have no water. They're trying to collect water in the sails with condensation and drink it. But they have no food. They have no water. They're desperate. They're becoming dehydrated. And part of that means you kind of lose your mind when you become dehydrated. Not the fact that over and above, they were starving. So after all the turtle and the turnips were exhausted, one of the crew goes to the captain. His name was Edmund Brooks. He was a single guy. He had no wife. He had no kids. And Edwin Stevens, who's the other one, did have a wife and did have children. But Edmund Brooks goes to the captain and says, you know, Mr. Parker, the cabin boy, isn't doing very well. And I think we ought to kill him and eat him. And the captain's appalled. He says, what are you, crazy? He's fine. There's nothing wrong with him. He says, we're not going to kill anybody. And the crewman then goes back and he says, but I'm awful hungry. He says, I don't care. You're not going to kill somebody and eat them. That's horrific. What's wrong with you? So Brooks goes to this young Parker and says, you know, I know you're really, really thirsty. I've heard that old seamen used to drink seawater and they build up a tolerance for the salt. And after a while, they'd be able to drink it just like regular water. He says, don't know it's true, but that's what I've been told. So this young kid, not knowing anything else, is kind of stupid, drinks the seawater. He believes what this person is telling him. And when you drink seawater, it's got the salt in it. Not only does it immediately dehydrate you and make you more thirsty, but it makes you sick. So now Parker is throwing up repeatedly. You know, he's basically got nothing to throw up because he hasn't eaten anything for several days except for that turtle, and there's nothing left in his system. But he's now also incredibly dehydrated. He's got these dry heaves. He's sick as could be. He's like passed out in the corner. So this crew member, Brooks, goes back to the captain and says, you know, I told you Parker was in a bad way and, you know, he's going to die and we ought to kill him before we die too. And we ought to eat him. The captain says, we're not killing anybody. He's sick because you talked him into drinking seawater. I saw it. He says, yeah, but he's sick now. He says, but you caused it. He says, I still think we ought to kill him. He says, we're not killing anybody. So then Brooks goes to the other crew member, Edwin Stevens, and says, you know, the captain doesn't agree with me, but I think we ought to kill Parker and we ought to eat him. And Stevens says, I don't think that's a very good idea. I'm hungry too, but you know, we shouldn't kill this kid. And, you know, maybe after he dies, we could talk about it. But and Brooks says, but we'll be dead by then. And now they're having these conversations as if they're private. This boat is 12 feet long, this lifeboat. Okay. So even if there's a windy day, okay, this, you know, from stem to stern, the boat's 13 feet. So I'm sure they're all hearing this conversation, including the cabin boy. Don't eat me. Well, every single day, he goes to the captain. Brooks goes to the captain. I think we ought to kill the cabin boy. I think we ought to kill the captain. One day, just to get him off his back, on the 25th of July, this is 20 days after they've been in this lifeboat, they have this conversation again. Brooks goes to him, and the captain says, look, let me pray on it, and I'll get back to you. So he goes to the corner of the boat and starts praying. Well, Brooks takes that as the signal to kill him. So he whips out the knife that he carries with him and plunges it into the neck of the cabin boy and kills him. He tells him before he dies, sorry, you're going to make a great sacrifice for all of us. And he kills the cabin boy. Well, the captain hears this from praying in the corner. He says, what did you do? And Brooks says, well, I already did it, so let's just cut him up and eat him. And that's what they do. They cut him up and they eat him. Well, 4 days later, they're finishing off the cabin boy for dinner, and they get rescued by a ship. Suddenly, another ship comes by and they rescue him. Now, to show what idiots these people are, they could have told the new ship when they come on board and get rescued, geez, the Mignonette went down. It was a horrible storm. We couldn't save the cabin boy. He was hit on the head of the mast and he died. That's not what they said. That's what smart criminals would do. But they wanted to be honest, honorable men. How honest and honorable you are when you kill and eat the kid, I don't know. But at the end of the day, they thought that they would be honorable, and they told the ship's crew that rescues them, yeah, we're really hungry, and on the 20th day, we killed and ate the cabin boy. The captain says, I didn't sanction that. I didn't want it, but I ate him once he was dead. Now, they sailed back into England. And when they get there, the entire crew of the ship goes off and starts telling everybody what these three crew members did. The family of Richard Parker is not only appalled, but they're enraged. They killed my son and ate him. Who does this? They're cannibals. And they demand that they be prosecuted. The authorities bring him up on charges of murder because they murdered the young man. The defense to this was the defense of necessity, whereby they said we had to kill him because we were starving to death. Is necessity the defense to killing a person in order to save yourself? No. The court says no. You cannot kill another person in order that you not go hungry. That's not what the defense of necessity says. Now, justifiable homicide does exist. If someone tries to kill you or kill another person, the law provides a defense of justifiable homicide. You can kill someone to prevent them killing you. Or you can kill someone in order to prevent them from killing another person. But you can't kill them because you're hungry. The defense of necessity is not this. The defense of necessity is if that person, that cabin boy, was trying to kill you. That's not what they were doing. These three were convicted, and they were sentenced to death. And while they were sitting, waiting on appeal for their death sentence to take place, because they killed them, Queen Victoria, who had followed this whole status, said, you know, this was just a cavalcade of horrible situations. These men had served, by that time, 3 years in jail. She commuted their sentences. She said, horrible crime, shouldn't have done it, but they shouldn't be put to death. Why? Because they weren't in their right mind, because no one in that boat could be. Pretty grim tale. You do not have a defense that you can eat your friends if you're hungry. That's not a valid defense. Justifiable homicide requires that the person's trying to kill you or kill another person. That was not the case here. They were rightfully convicted of the murder charge. And Queen Victoria may well have been right to commute their sentence because it was under such horrific circumstance. That was no quality or confidence or consolation to the Parker family. Their son was dead. And you know what? They were rescued 4 days later. And they probably could have survived it. Sad tale. See you next time.